Hey everybody, this is Pierre Quinn and you're listening to episode number 66 of the Leading While Green podcast, where my mission is to help you live, learn, and lead with confidence. On this episode of the podcast, my guest is Anthony Bolden. Anthony currently serves as the program manager for the Partnership to Educate and Advance Kids, a program in Chicago, Illinois. And on this episode, we talk about Anthony's professional journey and his advice for emerging leaders who are trying to find their purpose. We have a great conversation, so listen up. Before we jump into the conversation with Anthony Bolden, I just want to thank you so much for supporting the Leading While Green podcast. And if this is your first time listening, as soon as this episode is done, I want to encourage you to hop over to iTunes and leave a review and some comments and let me know how much you've enjoyed this podcast. For the rest of you, you know what to do because you've been doing it already. You've left a review on iTunes. You've shared it on social media. You've emailed and texted the links to your friends. And I want to encourage you to continue to do so because the podcast is growing because of your efforts. Now, what you can also do is hop over to prcquinn.com. We got a lot of stuff going on over there. My leaders list, my email list, that you get all the updates before anyone else. You really want to be on that list. We got some good stuff coming your way, and I want to make sure that you get it first. As a matter of fact, I'll probably do something special for the whole Black Friday, Cyber Monday thing as it relates to my course. So you want to be sure to be on the leaders list. I got a free course, 12 Ways to Grow as a Leader, completely free, 4-part video lessons packed full of content. But there's also my signature Leading While Green leadership course, my leadership intensive, that I want you to get your hands on and get it for your team as well. And I am going to do something special for Black Friday, Cyber Monday. So be on the lookout for an email regarding that. Okay, Anthony Bolden, our guest for today, is a dynamic leader, speaker, and mentor for youth and young adults seeking to find their purpose in life. He's been privileged to serve in a number of leadership roles, including in churches, with nonprofits, and with collegiate choral ensembles. Currently, he serves as the program manager for PEAK Chicago. PEAK stands for the Partnership to Educate and Advance Kids. Now, in this role, Anthony is responsible for leading a program that gives high school students from underserved communities free tuition to attend private school, as well as one-on-one mentoring for their high school journey. Now, previous to this role, Anthony served as the youth and worship pastor for the Oakwood University Church in Huntsville, Alabama. He is also the host of the Embolden podcast, a leadership and lifestyle podcast for young adults seeking to maximize their life's potential. Here's my conversation with Anthony Bolden. Excited to be joined on this episode of the Leading While Green podcast by my good friend Anthony Bolden, who is currently the program manager for the PEAK Chicago program. Anthony, thanks for joining us today.
Hey, man, it's an honor. I'm happy that I finally made it on the show. Yes,
sir. Get out of here, man. You had me on your show a while ago, and it's only right that I return the favor. So glad that you could be with us.
Yes, sir.
So, okay, now you're living in Chicago now and read a little bit of your bio in the intro to the show. Man, back us up, man. On this show, we've been doing a lot of backstory with many of our guests. So back us up. As a leader, what would you consider to be one of the most pivotal times or more enlightening times in your childhood, maybe during high school, where you knew that you were being called to make a difference in the world?
Yeah, man. So I grew up like a lot of people that come from communities like mine, a single parent home, a lot of trauma, right? And, you know, you had a mom who was doing her best, you know, on government assistance, working multiple jobs. And, you know, it was kind of funny because I have friends who, you know, their parents were doing whatever. But you could tell like the difference in upbringing in the house. Right. Mm-hmm. And my mom, even though like sometimes, you know, maybe by the, you know, how much money we had, you could tell that we were poor, but she didn't let us, you know, act poor in our behavior. Right. Mm-hmm. So that mentality kind of always followed me in school. Right. And I remember being in high school and honestly just leading a pretty average life, trying to be the class clown, trying to get with the girls, not being very intentional with my work. And there was this teacher, his name was Mr. Rienzi, this old Italian guy. I mean, just always sharp, used to drive this old school two-seater Mercedes. Mr. Rienzi used to always look out for me, but this one day in particular changed my life forever. I remember being in the front foyer of my high school, hanging out with my guys, and we're like making a big ruckus. It's kind of towards the end of the day, and Mr. Rienzi, in his deep Italian voice, like he usually does, says, "Hey, Anthony, come here." And everybody, you know, they get quiet, and I walk over to him, and he says to me loud enough so that they can hear too. He says, "Anthony, you know, you have so much more potential in you, and you're not going to be able to reach it if you keep hanging out with those guys." And I looked over around my, you know, over my shoulder, and I could see them making a face. He's like, "In the morning, I want you to come to my office." Make a very long story short, Mr. Rienzi introduced me to a program called Trot Rosemary Hall that changed my life, because it was in that program that, or through that program or that school really, that I was able to, you know, experience education in a way that I had never experienced it before. I was in a place where people actually wanted to learn. Teachers actually cared. And that 6 week summer changed my life. So I came back to my community after being on this beautiful campus, and honestly, my life was changed. I mean, I was no longer this kid who was headed in the wrong direction, even though his mother tried her hardest to, wake him up and say, "Hey man, you need to do something with your life." It was just like, I was becoming a product of my environment. Mm-hmm. And what Mr. Rienzi did for me was pull me out of that situation, expose me to something that I had never experienced before. And then once the program was done, it placed me back into my environment. But because of that exposure, my life was changed forever. And I think that experience for me has really shaped my life, from that point forward.
So we know that tons of teachers, tons of coaches, or maybe not tons, maybe just the good ones, every year since school has been going on, have been speaking life into students and saying, mm-hmm. "Hey, you're better than this. You can do much more. There's so much more out there for you." What was it about you at the time that made you receptive to what he said? And even the classification that he made of the people that you were hanging around, what made you receptive and lean into that advice? Where, as some other young people would say, "Oh, this old Italian guy doesn't know what he's talking about," or "I'm just going to hang out with my friends," or "I'm going to disregard his advice." What made you lean into what he was saying instead of back away?
That's a great question. I don't think anyone has ever asked me that question or asked me it that way. So I'm the oldest, right? On both parents' side. My parents never married. My dad has 7 kids. My mom has 5. I have 2 adopted brothers through a relationship my mom had. And there was always this sense of responsibility in my life. I mean, since a young child, I remember being like 8 years old and just having to watch all my dad's kids. So I always knew like that people were watching me and that my actions matter. And I think though through my teenage years, I wasn't always, acting on that sense of responsibility. It was always there. So I would like go to the party, but I wouldn't maybe go go randomly egg cars or something like that. There would always be this like step that I wouldn't take. Mm. Like I was always like 1 foot in and 1 foot out. And I think Mr. Rienzi just caught me in that moment in life where there was this desire, you know, there's always been this desire for more. I mean, I didn't want to be poor, right? But I thought my way out, or I was starting to convince myself that my way out might be through like selling weed or becoming a rapper, quote unquote, because that's all I saw. And Mr. Rienzi, what he did was he was able to kind of take that drive, that potential that he saw for wrong and kind of use it and kind of, you know, what they say, redirect it for something more positive. I hope I'm answering the question, but for me, I think it was really like, it was something that was in me that he knew that there was definitely something that was different from the others. There was this level of responsibility, this this hunger, this thirst for a better life. I just was trying to go about it in the wrong way.
You can be honest with me, man, and the people who listen to this podcast. Did you said rapper? Did you really have bars?
Listen, bro. Listen, Limoil Green people, let me let y'all know something real quick. Your boy has some bars, okay? Yeah, every time I tell my wife, she kind of cringes because she's like, "Ah, this is scary." But I have some bars and something. Like, listen, you know, the Lord had other plans, but you know how people say, man, if I didn't mess up my ACL or if it wasn't for this, then I would have went to the league. That's kind of what I felt like. I was like, okay. Yeah, you know, if it wasn't for Mr. Rienzi, I might be
platinum.
Right on the billboards right now. So, you know, but God had other plans. It's all right, though.
So let's fast forward a couple of years as it relates to responsibility. And our paths crossed in the great city of Bowling Green, Kentucky. I was pastoring a small church down there in Kentucky. Well, I'm close to Washington, D.C., so geographically down there in Kentucky. And I met you. When I met you, you pulled up in a charter bus, a coach bus with
Kelton Tours,
100-something college students. And you were director of a choir. Now, people who are not familiar with church life and church space, choir directing is a huge responsibility.
Yeah.
Especially a choir director at a historically black college or university, which has multiple choirs, but having this position is a big, big deal. So tell us a little bit about how you got to that place to be directing that choir, and give us the background about your school and everything. And then what lessons on life and leadership did having that responsibility teach you?
Yeah, this is good. So we can kind of take the story from where I left it, right? So I come back from this experience that Mr. Rienzi really opened, you know, how he opened this door for me to go chill, came back, and now I had a new focus on life. And here's something that I want every leader, especially a young leader, to peel into. Those early steps, if you're in undergrad, or maybe even if you're in high school and you listen to this podcast, every single day, every single year, it matters. And eventually, what you did in that one season of your life will be accounted for. And sometimes people get to the checkout stand, right? They get to the cashier and they don't have enough in the bank because they didn't take for granted that small lesson. And that's what I was finding when it was time to go to college. But I praise the Lord for a school called Oakwood who allowed a brother like me to get in. And I mean, and it wasn't that I didn't get into other schools, but they would like, yeah, we'll come in and interview you and we'll let you in, but we ain't giving you no money. I mean, there was no scholarship, so there was no way to actually afford the school. But Oakwood let me in. My church, for the first 2 years I was there, they paid the way. And I remember being there. I had a gift in music. I had a natural ability to lead. I was really like, you know, I'm kind of like first generation Adventist in many ways. Me and my parents, we kind of came into our church system like through a tent meeting. But that was when I was like 8 years old. So my mom was as brand new as I was. And so I go to this school that was enriched in this subculture called Adventism. And I didn't know anybody, you know, and it was kind of really like everybody seemed like they knew each other before they came, which was weird to me because I'm like, I know I came from Connecticut. This guy, he said he came from Oregon. How do we all know each other? However, I come to the school and, you know, I just start, you know, networking and, you know, getting to know people. And it becomes clear to everyone that Anthony has this gift for music. And I remember I was home for Thanksgiving break and the choir director for my beloved The Voices of Triumph gospel choir, her name was Maya Rutledge at the time. Maya calls me and says, hey, I saw you leading a group at this ministry that we had on campus called Power Hour. I'm like, yeah, you know. And she says, I also know that you're in the university choir. She just asked me, she was like, I want you to pray for a month to see if you would want to take over my choir. Mm. I had never led a choir before. I mean, I sang in my church's choir at home, but that was pretty much the end and beginning of it all. So fast forward that month, I say yes. She says yes. So we start that process. And I take over this choir. And when I got the choir up here, we had a whopping number of 30 members. There were only 30 members in VOT at the time.
Wow.
And And we had taglines like, even though our name was Voices of Triumph, people would call us like Voices of Terror and Voices of Trash. Like, we were not a good choir. Self-admittedly, right? Yeah. We were known as the worship choir. You know, people who are like, they have good intentions, you know, they're ministering from a place of sincerity, but the product of the ministry wasn't, you know, reaching that Oakwood standard. So I remember taking this choir, and I don't know if it was like, here I am, I'm the kid who has the chip on his shoulder because I'm the kid who came from the hood. Nobody knows who I am. I'm unchurched. People look at me weird. So I'm gonna prove everybody wrong. So, and I kind of made VOT that project for me, right? And I just started grinding. I mean, and we just worked hard. And I remember they hated this in the beginning, but the best choir in the world to me, still to this day, is the Oakwood University Aeolians. I had a great opportunity to sing with them. So I used to always say to them that we want to be better than the Aeolians. Now, that was impossible because we didn't have auditions. Anybody could join. And most of the time we used to get like whoever was left. Whoever didn't get into the more selective groups on the campus, VOT, you know, we got them. Mm-hmm. And I used to always tell people when it came to VOT, I had to work twice as hard to get half the sound the other choirs were getting. But the choir changed my life because it became almost like a pastoral role, right? Because as the choir began to grow, I mean, I began to make bonds and relationships with people that honestly still are holding strong to this day, right? The choir went from 35 members to, when I graduated Oakwood University, we had 125, right?
Wow.
And I mean, we were the only choir who was doing like 10-day tours, and these things cost like $15,000. So, I mean, and if I could say like some lessons I've learned about leadership, I think one, the biggest lesson I've learned about leadership through VOT is that the product of your project, the product of your leadership or your team, whatever you're doing, really begins with you. So I think VOT became what it became. Like, it became a greater choir because I believed that I was this great director. I believed that the choir could actually be great. And I would speak to them as if they were already great. I started to act and move in the direction that I was trying to go, right? So we didn't allow ourselves, and I didn't allow myself to be, you know, dismayed by what people would say or what happened on Twitter or Facebook or Instagram or whatever. And, you know, I would just kind of, even if we had a bad performance, we're going back to the drawing board. How can we be better? So it's almost like we were always fighting from a place of adversity. We were like the underdog. So it's like, you know, that underdog mentality, you're going to fight. And I think that hard work people started to notice. So yeah, we were working harder than people, the other choirs were, but there came a point that we never realized that we didn't even have to work that hard anymore. Like, we had trained so hard that all those necessary skills that singers kind of walked in the door with, our singers started walking in the door with. And singers who could have gone to other choirs, like my senior year, were asking, hey, can I come and sing? But I think it started with our mentality. And I want to say to anyone who's listening, I mean, I don't think that the reason why you can't or can do something is based off of your ability. And VOT proves that point, because I have people in my choir, some of my best friends who were in my wedding, they can't sing to save their lives, but they were tenors in my choir and traveled the whole country with me, right? And ministered to thousands and thousands of people. And no one in that room would know that they could not sing. But it was that their mentality to believe that they belonged, right? It was their mentality that said, hey, I'm accepted in this space, and the only requirement for me in this space is to work as hard as everyone else is working. So for the person who's listening and saying, well, this person might be more talented than me, this person may have more natural gifts than me, be honest with yourself and say, yes, they do. Mm-hmm. They do. They are more naturally talented. Yeah, they can sing better. But what can you do that will level the playing field? I think what you can do is work harder than they're going to work. What you can do is grind harder than they'll grind. What you can do is fall in love with the process of practicing and learning your craft and just being able to, at the drop of the dime, be great. Because even the most talented and gifted people fail because sometimes they don't practice. They rely too much on the gift. And then when it's time to perform, they're not ready because they're leaning too much on what's natural. And some spaces don't require that the laziness of just natural ability. Some spaces say, all right, no, we need to see you go to another level, right? People always say, dig a little deeper, dig a little deeper. And I've seen people struggle with digging deeper or going to another level because they've never pushed themselves to do that. They've just always been kind of working in a vein of comfortability. So I know I'm rambling, but BLT taught me a lot. I think I would not be the leader that I am today without that ministry experience, that leadership experience, because it was really pivotal to me in so many ways. So, but that one was may stand out the most.
No, that's good, because a lot of times, you know, as leaders, especially emerging leaders, we want to complain about what we've been given, the cards that we've been dealt, as it were. And a lot of times you don't have any say in that, but your experience with this choir, Voices of Triumph, with 30 plus members in the beginning, ballooning to 100 plus choir that travels the world, is an excellent demonstration of, you may not have a say about what you're given, but you have a say in whether or not you're going to do the most.
Yeah, that's good, Doc. Yeah.
And sometimes that's hard for us. Now, this experience with Voices of Triumph at Oakwood University and, you know, our experience, you bringing the choir to the small church that I was pastoring, it led me to be motivated to recommend you for another position at my alma mater. And yes, in our denominational circles, there's like this fake, I don't know, fake or real disparity between Oakwood and Andrews, whatever.
It's very real, Doc. Whatever.
I'm leaning toward, I was trying to make it fake, but
no, that's real, man. It's there.
whatever it is, as I'm wearing my Andrews hoodie. But yeah, anyway, so the recommendation for when you went to graduate school to now lead the gospel choir at Andrews University, and you were there for a while, and then you took another position, which kind of stretched you, which eventually brings you to the position that I want to talk about towards the end of our interview.
Yeah,
but talk to us a little bit about transitions and making those decisions. You're in grad school. There's another opportunity to lead a choir, and then another opportunity comes along. And how do we walk us through how you wrestled with a major decision like that, with maybe some insight for us on if we're wrestling with similar things.
Yeah, man. I just prayed a lot. Like, and I know that's not like, you know, just this amazing hook, but that's true. I just had to pray. And for me, I felt like I allowed God to take over my life when I went to Choke. And I knew like my success, no matter how hard it was at certain points in the journey, was because he was elevating me, and that he would continue to allow me to succeed as long as I continue to stay committed to staying connected to him. So when the call came from Andrews, it actually came twice. It came my fifth year at Oakwood, but I wasn't graduating that year. So they called me, they asked me if I wanted it. I said, I would love to have it, but I don't think I'm going to Andrews this year. So another year passes. I had a few more classes to finish up at Oakwood. And so I had to bite that bullet and stay one more year. You know, here I am, that six-year senior. And the call comes again around the same time. And I remember connecting with the director at the time, or he had stopped directing. His name was Adrian Langdon. Mm-hmm. Adrian telling me, hey, man, I walked away from the choir because, you know, we had done 6 years and we told them this was our last year. We didn't find anyone. We were going to have to just go on a hiatus. And the choir hadn't had a choir director for the whole year. They didn't operate. Make a long story short, I took the job, and I remember kind of coming through the door extremely nervous because I'm always nervous to come behind a leader who has set such a long standard of excellence. And he's been there for so long and people just, you know, love him. And I'm like, oh God, this is going to be so tough. But I'll say this, he was one, I think he's an excellent leader, but I think he was very intentional in preparing me for the personalities, the culture, and just kind of helping me grow as a leader before I needed to start. Mm-hmm. So he didn't just say, here's this choir, figure it out. I mean, he transitioned me in. He paired me with some of the best people. And I mean, I have to say thank you to you too, because I mean, if you recommended me, that's how I met my wife. I mean, my wife was one of the first people that I met when I started this choir. I mean, she was one of the section leaders, and you know, the rest is history. She's my wife. So I get that opportunity to come to Andrews, and it just really blew up really fast. And I think the reason why the experience at Andrews was so powerful was because I think when it came to my musical, like, I don't know, maturation, I was really at like a high standard. I had just graduated with a degree in music. I mean, my voice, my technique, everything was just kind of really primed and polished. And then I had this choir who was filled with veterans. I mean, these weren't brand new people. The choir was filled with people who have been singing in there at least 1 year. Majority of them have been in there multiple years. So I took a sound that had already been, you know, established, and all I had to do was kind of refine it and polish it. And that was just the most amazing experience. Directing that choir was easy, because Adrian really had done all the work. He really kind of just allowed me to start driving. It's kind of like the driver's test, and you got two steering wheels, and the driver kind of that, and that's kind of how it felt. But experience. So I had moments while directing at Andrews with my former pastor, and I interned at his church down at Oakwood when I was there. And, you know, I took my choir down there, and I'm showing off, and they singing their faces off. And make a long story short, that summer, after directing this choir for a year, and I had plans for this choir too. I mean, we were going to go to England. I wanted to do like a international tour. I mean, big plans. And, you know, everybody singing my praises, like, wow, we've never heard this choir sound this way. It was just an amazing year. Hmm. And I get a call from Oakwood Church, Dr. Bird, and he says, hey man, there's a position here at our church, full-time conference role. I know you're halfway through your master's degree, but do you want it? If you want it, it's yours. And I prayed. And that's what I did. I prayed and I prayed and I prayed some more, and I kept on praying. And let me just throw this out to anyone real quick. Three things I think you must do when you are considering doing anything in your life, to be honest. I don't want to say anything like major, but especially in major decisions, I think you should do this. One, pray first. Two, if God has put special people in your life, talk to them. Mm-hmm. That could be your girlfriend, that could be your wife, that could be your parents, your friend circle. Talk to them about what you feel is on your heart. Because if God has put it there, I'm not saying all of them will recognize it, but they'll be able to see if that, like, they'll be able to know if that's what God has put in your heart. Somebody will be able to connect, and you'll know if God is speaking through them. And then three, I would say, you got to actually claim it. Like, you have to make a decision in that process of, do you want it or not? Like, mm-hmm. whether you're going to take it, do you want it? Those three things I did in every state. I mean, with VLT, I prayed, I talked to some family members about it, and then I asked the question, do I want it? Because my mother will always say to me, Anthony, anything you want, God will give to you. You have to remember that. Anything you want. And I know that's hard for people to understand and wrap their mind around, because we always believe like, oh no, that's not how life works. No, anything you want, God will give to you. So she would say that. And every single step, VLT, at Andrews, I mean, the job that I got at Oakwood, I prayed, I sought counsel, and then I made a proclamation. I claimed it. I said, I want this, and I believe that God's going to give it to me. And then he did. So,
well, there came a time when you were at Oakwood where you got a nudge. And I was talking to Chuck Gatica on a previous episode, and he was just talking about there was a time in his career where he just had a nudge, where he knew that it was time for him to do something else. Tell us about that nudge for you. I mean, this is kind of a storied thing. You go to a great school. You have all these opportunities to direct choirs. You have these responsibilities. You're traveling the world. Now you're back at the campus school or the campus church at your alma mater from undergrad. And I mean, this is the kind of stuff that some people like they dreamed about this.
Yeah.
And now you get a nudge and it's like, okay, maybe it's time for you to do something else. Tell us about that.
Man, and I want to apologize to the people who are listening to the podcast because I feel like I'm glazing over details, but I want to be detailed in this space so that you can really understand, right? And just a plug for the for my podcast, you know, if you want to hear more about me, check out my episode about stories, part one. Then I'll kind of tie it all in.
That's the Embolden podcast. And we'll be sure to put that in the show notes.
So, yeah, but we don't have enough time to go through it all. But I say that to say this. This moment, right, to me was such a culminating moment. I feel like our lives have seasons, right? Mm-hmm. And I felt like this was more like an overarching season over many seasons, like small segments of seasons, right? And I felt like I'm at this church that most of my friends would dream to be at, especially as like, you know, your first stop coming out of seminary. I mean, most of us are going out into, I mean,
Bowling the middle Green, of nowhere.
Bowling Green, Kentucky, So-So, Mississippi, Yazoo City, Rolling Forks. I mean, that's where we are, right?
Yeah.
And I get this opportunity to go back to my alma mater, one. Two, I interned at Oakwood for 2 years as a paid intern, but also it was like I was a son of that church. So going home there was very different than like arriving at any other church. And I had an amazing experience. I mean, literally a space was carved out there for me. I was able to operate in my gifting, but like I'm 6 months in and God says, this is not what you'll be doing. This is what God says, because I don't even want to try to like paraphrase what he said. I'm sitting at my desk and I'm working on the rest of my master's. I'm finishing up my master's. So I'm working on an assignment. And I remember feeling like I'm doing this master's degree and I feel like I'm doing this for what? And then I felt God say, that's exactly the question I wanted you to ask. Like that, it was just that moment of like, now I want you to search. It was like, I'm doing this master's degree and I'm thinking like this master's degree is it, you know, because that's all you need, honestly. And in our context, you need a master to pastor.
Yeah.
And I mean, I had a great backing or whatever, you know, from great pastors and great recommendations. I'm starting in a good place. And God says, what next? And I just started to have this, I don't know, like this lack of fulfillment. And at first I thought, Pierre, like, oh, I'm just still learning the job, blah, 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 blah. And it just kept growing. And I started to, you know, we'll go to these different conferences with other pastors and still, I mean, I felt more that way when I was around them. Like I felt I could hear in conversation that this person is in their purpose. They're operating in that sweet spot. And I did not feel that way. And I started to ask God, what's next? And the first way that God started to identify what he was, you know, moving me toward was he did it in the form of what I studied next. All right. So I didn't feel like my degree was serving where I wanted to go. And literally I was spending months considering doing like a master's of organizational leadership, a master's of business administration. And he kept telling me no. I'm like, what? And one day I just decided I was going to take 1 month and stop looking, stop searching for schools, stop trying to figure out the career path and just live, like just work. And I did that literally the day I said, all right, let's look again. Like I was at church real late and I was like, all right, I'm just going to start searching. And literally he didn't speak it, but it was almost like it was spoken. I felt like what I was supposed to do, he spoke it to me. He said, nonprofit. And I was like, what? And literally, I just kind of went in my computer and said, can I go to school and get a master's for nonprofit degree? Question, Google. And Google just gave me a list of opportunities that I had never even considered. I was like, my mind was blown. And right there, it hit me. That next day, I go to Nashville. Me and my wife, we were heading up to Chicago that afternoon for 4th of July weekend. That literally next day, I go to Nashville. And I call one of my good friends, Lavina C. Wright. She's the first person I had a conversation with about like, maybe I don't want to do this anymore. And she was like, Anthony, you know, if somebody else called me, you know, I would question their motives. But because you're calling me and I know you, I actually think you're onto something here. And I started to pray. I told my wife, she was my fiance. Was she my fiance at the time? She was my fiance at the time. And I said, hey, babe, what if I told you I don't want to pastor anymore? And she kind of got a little quiet. And she was like, are you sure? And I'm like, I think so. And then she was like, you know, I'm here to support you. So like wherever God is doing in your life, I'm here to follow what God is leading. So we started to pray. And God started to make it very clear, Anthony, I want you to go back. And guys, I want y'all to hear this, how it goes full circle. I want you to go back and serve youth the same way that Mr. Rienzi served you. Like when I started to figure out what I wanted to do, the picture of my mind that kept coming up was Mr. Rienzi and what Mr. Rienzi did for me. And I knew that God was calling me to Chicago. I knew that God wanted me to serve inner city youth. I knew then that God only plucked me out, polished me up, refined me, removed all the impurities, only to send me back in. And that kind of started the journey of the job search. So,
That's just part one of my conversation with Anthony Bolden about his journey from pastoral ministry to working with a nonprofit in inner city Chicago. Now, I normally don't do two-part interviews, but Anthony and I go for a while about his journey, pulling apart his backstory and then what he's doing now. And I decided I'm going to release it in two parts. So next week's podcast episode will be the conclusion of my conversation with Anthony. It's a great conversation. I know you've enjoyed it so far. I want to encourage you to hop over to iTunes, leave a five-star review and some comments. Hop over to prccoin.com, get on my leaders list, and take my free leadership course. Hey, that's all we got for this episode of the Leading While Green podcast. And until next time, take care and God bless.